This is episode 27 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk some more about No Room at the End. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I still feel really bad for Matt Jameson.
I know, man.
Poor guy. I know I said that last episode, but I still do. The guy just cannot catch a break.
Cannot catch a break.
And the problem is I feel like he does it to himself sometimes.
I was just going to say that. How much do you think does he do it himself because of how much hope he has? You know?
Yeah, because he's eternally optimistic, which is a beautiful thing in this world of the leftovers that they've created. But in the end, can you really be that positive? Can you really be that, optimistic in that world? Because it's certainly not a world that's conducive to that. It's almost like The Walking Dead, where you can't be normal anymore in that world.
Yep.
There's no such thing as just normalcy the way that we live here and now. Like the way that you are listening to this show. Our world is a civilized world with laws, rules, and everything. And The Walking Dead, they don't got that. And in The Leftovers, it's almost like that too. You even see that with the like that huge town outside of Miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do it.
Well, Matt is a man of faith. That's all it is.
I know.
He's a man of faith slash his own faith that he's got going on.
He's a man of faith, but he's also testing himself without even consciously knowing that he's doing it. He keeps making these bad decisions, and then eventually he realizes, oh shit, I think I lost my way a little bit. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, again, like what we talked about, that's why I think he ended up going into the stockade or the stock and going into the repent. So he had to repent for himself.
Well, I just think it's so hard. You know, people who do spend the majority of their time reading stories like the Bible, mm-hmm. where it's stories of hope and believing in something that you can't see, that's not tangible. Plus, all of these martyrs and these people who go through these trials and they're questioning God and they do these great things and then God does often repay them.
Sure.
So think about that. If that is all that you read and all that you studied and mm-hmm. all that you believed in, wouldn't you be doing these same things that Matt does?
Here's the question. Do you think God is going to repay Matt Jameson? Do you think that?
I don't know. I do not know.
No, I don't no, either.
We're going to be talking a lot more about Matt Jameson, of course, because this was the whole episode about him, No Room at the Inn. But mm-hmm. before we do, we have a couple of announcements that we wanted to make before we got into the listener feedback. First and foremost, don't forget to check out our interview with Amy Brenneman, a.k.a. Lori. We yep. had such a fun time chatting with her, and she really had a lot of great things to say.
That's right. She gave a lot of intricate knowledge about the background of Lori, that character. She even talked about the relationship between Patty and Lori, Meg and Lori, and what she thought that that Tom told her about Meg within the context of the current story now. And I know we've been putting out a lot of episodes, and it can get a little overwhelming to keep up with all of this. I totally understand if you're a total Leftovers nerd like me, you're consuming it all the time. But if you're just a regular listener, guess what? We got more stuff for you.
So much of the Leftovers is the feeling that you get of the Leftovers.
Correct.
Is thanks to the actors, but also a huge part of it is thanks to the composer, Max Richter. Mm-hmm. So he is the composer. He's written the score, and a lot of people comment about his music for mm-hmm. this show.
Correct.
We actually we'll be having an interview with Max Richter coming up. It is going to be the next episode of The Living Reminders. So make sure that you hit subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher Radio so that that way it is automatically sent to you. Max is unbelievably talented, and you're really going to have such a unique perspective about The Leftovers and about this world and about the way that I described it to him. As I said, I feel like this is another location. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. The music is another location for us. So make sure you subscribe so that that gets to your phone.
Yeah, so you'll be able to learn about the how he crafts his music and also the themes that go into the show, the intricacies and the types of instruments, the different ways he uses certain instruments. You're going to learn all about that in the next episode. And I know we were late for this listener feedback, and we had to postpone it specifically because we wanted to announce the interview with Max Richter coming up for our next episode, which will, I think, come up on Monday, because we're recording this as of Saturday right now, and Monday it will come out. So the next announcement, my love.
The next announcement is Tag Your It, one of our favorite shops on Etsy, tagyourit.biz.
Who sponsors the Tweet of the Week, by the way.
Yes, is having a giveaway for The Leftovers. It's actually a pewter piece that says Mapleton Police Department.
It's in the shape of a badge, too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So please go to the website for this particular episode to see this giveaway. We will be kind of showing you what the piece looks like on social media so that way you can get a good idea. But once again, it's a giveaway, so it means it's free. So you're going to want to check it out.
What did we forget? So the first thing we didn't really forget it, but we just didn't spend enough time on it, at least in my opinion, is the conversation between John and Matt. And actually, I have it brought up here, so I just want to play some of this conversation for us.
And while she was awake, you made love. And then, shit, she went right back to this. That the story you're gonna tell? The only story you can tell. Because it's not true. Because that doesn't happen here. People don't get healed. My wife lost her hearing a long time ago, and it's still lost. So what? God likes your wife better than mine? Your friend Kevin here asked me to help you out. I owe him, so I will. But you gotta tell me the truth.
The truth.
In about 5 months, when your wife starts to show, and everybody knows she's pregnant, you need to say that you were sad and lonely and confused.
So I wanted to play that scene for you guys because this, I think, is going to be the driving force for the remainder of the show. And I'm not going to take credit for thinking about that, actually, by the way. I'm going to give credit to Brian Davids of the Brian Thought of the Week, because he's the one who brought this to my attention. You know, I always thought that this show was going to be about Kevin versus John, and I'm sure that there's going to be something that happens between the both of them. It's inevitable. That handprint was there for a reason on the car. John knows Isaac for a reason. All that stuff is there. But is it that it's the main conflict will be between Matt, the believer, and Kevin, John, the non-believer? And, man, Brian had this great thought. I know he talked about it last episode, where it was Matt was going to lead the people outside of Miracle back into inside Miracle. The park rangers are trying to keep everybody out, and it's John's town. But Matt believes, as a believer of God, that Miracle is a special place, and everybody deserves to be a part of it. It's not just that you get a day pass. It's not that you just get a little wristband, or you have to buy a house for $3 million. It's a special place, and everybody deserves to be a part of it. Now, will he come back and liven up that crowd and lead them into Miracle? you know, God, it seems like this ultimate conflict is going to happen. People see him get in that stockade and they say, wow, I wonder if anybody else has ever done this before. I wonder if anybody else has ever taken a place of someone in that stockade. And maybe that's why that lady was like so controversial with him, right? When he says, why is he in there? And she says, well, why not? Well, why don't you take his spot? Because she's just calling everybody's bluff and nobody ever does. But Matt finally did. Well, that galvanized that entire community. What do you think?
I don't think anyone else has done it before either. Mm-hmm. I agree. Unless that now guy had done it for like a family member, but I doubt it. I wonder if that guy was like her ex-boyfriend. Or he did something to piss her off. She's like, oh yeah? I'm going to show you.
And yeah. Why do you think John is so angry? Like, he says, listen, there are no miracles in Miracle. What do you think, that God loves your wife better than mine? Did he do something to Erica to cause
When did John go in jail?
Well, we know that he was in jail during the departure. And that timeline is a little fuzzy too, by the way. Because the timeline is, he was in there for 6 years, as to what he said. And he had gotten out, a couple of years before what we're seeing right now. Maybe it could work. I'm not sure. Because the departure was 4 years ago, yeah, within the context of the story. Mm-hmm. So
he was in jail for a while after the departure?
I would say for a little bit after the departure.
And I wonder where his jail was. I wonder if it was in Jardin. Like, I wonder if nothing happened, and because he was in prison, he was really in a bubble. Mm-hmm. for a couple of years, and he didn't get to understand how honestly big of a deal it was to be in Jardin during the departure and for the year after.
I think on a practical level you're right, but what I also think is that this there's no miracles and miracle thing, you can tell just the way that he's making Matt lie, saying no, you're gonna tell everybody that this didn't happen, you're gonna say it. It's a personal thing with John. It's not just, oh, this is my town and I want to protect it. It's not just, oh, yeah, I feel like I don't believe in God, so there's no miracles. No. He's pissed off. He's pissed off at this town, and he's going to make sure that everybody else is exactly like him for a specific reason. I wonder if he did something to Erica, or something that he has done that he really, really, really regrets. Mm-hmm. And he wish, because you can tell that he doesn't care about trying to kill the guy,
no,
right?
No.
I didn't try hard enough. That's what he said.
Jerk.
So, I love that social commentary. Thank you. You can tell that he doesn't care, but he does care about something that is miracle related. And from the way, what he just said, are you telling me your wife is loved by God more than my wife? Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be something to do with Erica. And the only clear thing that comes to me is her loss of hearing. Maybe he's pissed off because Erica hasn't got her hearing back yet.
Yep.
And maybe that's the difference. Maybe that's why she was conspiring with Evie with the sign language and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she knows that he is never going to come to her side, even though she believes in the miracles, regardless of whatever happened to her ears and the fact that she hasn't been healed. Maybe she believes and he doesn't, and she's afraid of him for not believing. What do you think?
I don't know. John's a madman.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why yet.
All right. What, do you want to get in listener feedback now?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. All right, the first one is an email from Terry Pitnick. She says, I know I'm probably in the minority here, but I feel like Matt's actions towards most people, even his wife, have been both self-righteous and selfish until the very end of this episode, when he finally gets it and repents. This was driven by the guilt of what happened to Mary, plus the reality that if the departure was the rapture or a spiritual event, he was not taken. You see that he loves his wife, but many actions in this episode were more about helping himself and not her. And my love, you caught on to this immediately last episode. You were saying that you felt that his actions were very selfish, selfish, right? And you felt like him taking care of his wife and whatever was more like, oh, we're doing this so that I can get you back.
Yes.
And not because, oh, I love
you. Selfless.
Yeah. Anyway. And he has been struggling to find his place spiritually. He's definitely struggling with his faith in God and his faith in general. In my opinion, he has been grieving the loss of his spiritual foundation. We see this in season one as he moves through the various stages of grief and anger, blame, trying to save the GR. And in this season, even calling himself one of the spared in Miracle. It's been a fascinating look at how a religious leader comes to terms with his world and finds his faith again. And I think that Matt really thinks that Mary woke up, but he also thought she was talking to him when he got knocked in the head. My theory, Damon will leave this a mystery.
Dun, 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 as Damon does.
Five Damons with one Damon for the masterful creation of the camp outside of Miracle.
Shakita wrote in, as a man of faith, Reverend Jameson is always torn between two beliefs. Being a good person will get you rewarded, and that if you suffer long enough, God will eventually come to your rescue. This episode paralleled Two Boats and a Helicopter in so many ways. A, he was trying to get money. Mm-hmm. B, he tried to help someone. And C, sustained a head injury. And D, he saw visions of his wife speaking to him. Nice. Lots of points right there. I don't know if Mary actually woke up and had sex with Matt, but that implication of rape by both the doctor and John Murray was heart-wrenching. I know Matt has a darkness inside of him. We've all seen it, but I don't think he'd ever willingly harm his wife. He'd probably started to doubt himself towards the end of the episode, and that is why he took the place of the man being punished. Reverend Jameson has hope that by punishing himself, he will suffer in the name of God, and God will hear his cries and alleviate his suffering.
Do you want to watch a show where someone will have sex with a comatose woman?
No.
Neither do I. I don't want that. And that's why I desperately want Mary to have woken up. And even if they leave it a little ambiguous, I'd be fine with that, because then I can at least believe that he did. But I just don't want to find out by some way that he did just take advantage of his wife. I can't have that. Wim chimes in. He says, okay, the whole thing rattled me in episode 5, and it made me feel uneasy. It was the most brilliant episode to date, in my opinion, but what about that deep bass sound effect during the opening scenes where Matt is trying to record Mary waking up again? That really freaked me out, and it sounded like evil was lurking just below the surface. What did you guys make of that? And what was it that made Matt suddenly on his laptop, what did he see on his laptop screen that rattled him enough to close the lid and stop recording? Creepy. Well, first, what do I make of that sound? It's almost like a Pavlovian type deal where you hear something that is about to come. It's a cue for you that something is about to happen, and that's a common trope used in TV and actually, you know where you find that a lot is the Paranormal Activity movies.
So spooky.
Whenever the ghost shows up, right before the ghost shows up, there's always this really deep rumble, and that's how you can tell that that Toby the ghost is about to show up. And as for what rattled Matt enough for him to close the lid, my take from it was that he saw himself. He saw himself treating Mary the way that he was treating her. At that time, he grabbed her face, made it push towards him, and said, "Look at me. You're testing me. Why are you doing this to me?" And he saw that he had fallen off the wagon a little bit. He had lost who he was. He no longer was the loving husband, the one who doted all over her. And again, it goes to this selfishness thing. Maybe he realized, holy shit, I am being selfish. I'm only doing all of this stuff because I need her for me and not just her. Ultimately, that's my opinion. On Facebook, Dane Bowder says, I think it will be left ambiguous as to whether Mary wakes up. Maybe in one of those last episodes, we won't see her in the frame with a shot focused on Matt or Nora or someone else, but we will hear her voice, leaving it up to us as to whether she actually woke up or not. Wow, I love that idea. That would be so freaking Damon Lindelof. I would die for that.
Fernando wrote, no matter how much you love and want to help your brother out, it is still a lot to ask of someone, meaning that Matt asked Nora to help with Mary. I didn't quite get why he wouldn't take the bracelet from the kid. He could have kept the bracelet and still helped the little boy. Mm-hmm. Jake Walden wrote in, Matt Jameson is a saint. He sacrifices and suffers tremendously for his wife, the child of the man who was attacked and robbed him, and the naked man who is trapped, injured, and humiliated in the campground. His motivation was the love, God, and others. If Matt Jameson isn't like Jesus Christ, I don't know who is.
And Lana, DJ Lana Williams on Facebook chimed in, said, this episode just frustrated me so much and it made me tired, but I love that it took me on the ride that it did. That means it moved me and that whatever they were trying to do worked. Him liking Job as his favorite book in the Bible was a good call. He's got the life to match it. I spent a lot of it scratching my head, but I know that the future episodes will make this one more clear. And here's my thought on this. We're halfway through the season right now. You know that? We're five episodes in. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm a Damon Lindelof fanboy. I totally am. But where are we in this season so far? What have we actually seen? I mean, we've seen the story with Lori, great, thank you very much. We've now seen the story with Matt, great, thank you very much. We've seen the Murphys, and now we've seen the Garveys. We've had a little bit of follow-up with the Garveys. But we haven't gone much further than the girls disappearing and then going to investigate the girls disappearing. And that is it. And now we're five episodes in. Consider where we were last season, five episodes in. We were at Gladys.
You're right.
You know, we saw Gladys. We saw that whole deal. Where would you... Narratively, I'm just not sure if we've traveled that far. So we have a lot of ground to make up. Although, again, in episode five, we are setting up this conflict with John Murphy and Matt. So maybe, perhaps again, that gives more credence to the idea that the driving force behind this season so far, or going forward, will be Matt versus John. And what happened in this episode only reinforces that. And the fact that we're halfway through. So that ultimately, that's my opinion on that.
Okay, so get this. Jana Jadella on Facebook brought up such a cool point, and I love this. Jana wrote, there is always 9,261 people in Miracle, mm-hmm. no matter what. And the man at the visitor center tells Matt something along the lines like, the man will die if you get inside. You'll need to save the boy. Something about saving the boy.
Yep.
Okay, so that is what happened, says Jana. The man died, but was replaced by Mary. Matt left and was replaced by this new little boy.
Ah.
The 9,261 always gets evened out. But when Kevin and his family moved in, there were technically four, but the three girls disappeared. So still need to think about something like that. But how interesting that there pretty much are still 9,261 residents in Miracle.
Wow, that is unbelievable. What a great thought. Really good thought. Melanie, I'm sorry about that. Melanie Lynn says, there's a picture of Matt with Ecclesiasticus 39:22 behind him, and it reads the following in the Bible. His blessing covered the dry land as a river and watered it as a flood. Wow, really cool stuff there. Talking, obviously, that's in reference to the water and Miracle and how it's now dry, but it could be a flood. And again, this idea of flood comes back again, right? Noah brings up a flood with Noah. Matt gets flooded out of Miracle. And now we have this Ecclesiastes reference talking about it getting watered as a flood.
You know, video clip, that audio clip that you played,
yep,
about John talking about his wife. Jillian on Facebook actually brought up a good point. She said, side note, so Erica went deaf. She was not born deaf.
Oh.
Perhaps from a head injury. Perhaps from someone who hurt her. Perhaps the same person John tried to kill.
Oh, great stuff. Perhaps John tried to kill Virgil, and perhaps it was Virgil who hurt Erica. And that's why there's like a problem. You ever think about that?
I think it's more that John did something that John did that got Erica hurt. because he has guilt, and that's why he's so mad that Nomira.
I would
happened.
Like that personally. I would like that better.
Yeah, that like he did something and knocked her over, or something happened, and it was his fault
mm-hmm.
that something started that it hurt her. So,
and that's why he's so pissed off at Miracle, because yeah, all these great things are happening around him, but yet his wife, who by all means is a great person, doesn't get the benefits of Miracle. What are we talking about here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably what you're getting at.
Gabriel wrote in, I don't think Matt is lying. I also think that Matt started to record their sleep on the webcam after the night she woke up to show everyone that there are miracles in Miracle and actually check every single second if she woke up again during the sleep. For me, this episode is something like Faith versus Science, kind of similar to Lost. Well, it's not much like Faith versus Science because John is driven by emotions, even though Matt is truly a man of faith. It's more something like believers versus non-believers. Since the prophet guy told John something bad was going to happen to him, he lost it and went on denial.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a position that he just doesn't want or can't believe anything supernatural happened, because if so, he'll never see his daughter again. And at the same time, he'll lose control of the town. Maybe there are other reasons we don't yet know why he denies these miracles, but these could easily be part of it too. Matt and John are totally on opposite sides of the matter of grace, disgrace, and there's a clear dichotomy between them.
Well, my friend Gabriel, I just got one thing and one thing only for you.
We have to go back, Kate.
Thank you so much. That is awesome. I love every word that you have to say. I'm not even going to comment on it. I'm just going to leave it as it is. On Twitter, Lynn Ellison says, the storytelling on The Leftovers has gotten so interesting now that they aren't beholden to the source material. Excellent point. I'm glad that they're off book. Now they're finally free to do whatever the hell they feel like, right? Dave Smith II says, oh wow, great name. Dave Smith II says, what is the deal with the lady in the wedding dress? And what is up with the landmarkers? And how many are there? We've seen number 7. You know, the wedding dress, I have no idea. I'm not even going to pretend to know what that's about. But with the markers, it's part of a tour, or they're historical landmarks, in my opinion, from the departure. So what they didn't want to just take them over, they just wanted to preserve them. And maybe they feel like, well, the departure happened, granted, and nobody disappeared, granted, but all these things happened during the departure, like all these little ruptures, so we don't want to get rid of them, because if we do, perhaps then there'll be another departure. Again, it's all about superstition, repeating certain things. We learned this from Tom Parada. Actually, if you go back to our episode, our chat with Tom Parada 2.0, you can go back to that on livingreminders.com. And you can listen to Tom say, everything about Miracle is all about superstition, repeating the same things over and over again, because that is what the people in Miracle believe will help them prevent another departure. Scarlett Neri tweets and she says, I'm too empathetic to watch Matt's episodes without squirming with discomfort. But go Honey Badger Nora with her anonymous tip.
Clint Church tweets, the biblical Joseph and Mary story contrasts with Matt and Mary's story. In the former, Mary would be shunned when pregnancy is discovered. In The Leftovers, though, you've got to think that Matt will be shunned when the pregnancy is discovered. Mary's awakening is real to Matt, just like Patty is real to Kevin. Hard to prove either way.
Wow, excellent. I love that comparison between the two, because we're so easy to believe Kevin with Patty, and it's hard to believe Matt with Mary. I mean, obviously we see Patty there too, but it's great stuff. Laura tweets and she says, I just saw the Ninth Doctor's penis on The Leftovers. This show never ceases to surprise.
Lots of penis. Lots of penis.
Lots of penis in this season so far. Yeah. There's a lot of been a lot of penis on TV as of late.
Bring it.
Lots
you know,
of penis.
It's real life, man.
Darren Karp tweets in and says, the violin music that plays during the poignant scenes of The Leftovers always makes me cry. And Darren, you're going to want to tune in the next episode, because we got Max Richter, like we said. So please make sure you do that. And Misha Mayhem tweets in, she says, I'm coining a new phrase. Because of this week's episode of The Leftovers, I'm now going to say it's Matt shit insane. Wow, I love that. Great.
Hashtag that.
All right, you ready for the voicemails?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do it.
Hello, it's Lisa Nanager calling again. Enjoy listening to the podcast. My thoughts on Mary's awakening. What I had noticed in that episode was the I called it the Groundhog Day sequence. Matt is eating Lucky Charms, which I find kind of ironic, and he turns on the music. Then the first thing that I noticed is when he's putting the lotion on Mary, he's not paying attention to her, but she moves her hand. She kind of makes like a soft fist. Second, the next time he's feeding her with a feeding tube, and he doesn't notice that she actually moves her thumb. So I don't know if this could be, you know, like she is awake, but she doesn't want him to know, or because the town doesn't believe in miracles, she's helping out her husband by, you know, keeping this on, keeping this facade on. And secondly, I noticed the third time through, the music kind of changes. It gets distorted. It almost sounds kind of evil. Mary is behind Matt, and Matt's eating his third, you know, the sequence of the burrito. He's eating Matt, and you can tell that her eyes are focused on the back of Matt, but she's out of focus, but she's not with that, she's not looking off anymore. She's actually looking at Matt, which I found was interesting. And then the other reason why is she didn't need CPR after she came out of the storm sewer, and her mouth was closed when she came out of the water when he grabbed her. And she would have, like, if this is truly what is going on with her, she would have needed CPR, possibly. And another thing I noticed, too, was Matt is, it's the second sequence of the Groundhog Day, and Matt is standing up there, and Mary's turned completely not looking at him. It's like, you know, you'll catch her, and she's not looking at him, or she's not even facing the right way. And there was a yellow, like a golden glow all around Mary, and I did notice that. And then the music changed again, like, you know, it changed like it did with the first time. And that's what I noticed about why I think that Mary is awake. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you, Lisa. That's excellent. Great stuff right there. I mean, you're calling into question, though. Well, not you, but it calls into question the idea that Mary is moving her hands and her fingers, and she is capable of movement. Now, is that movement voluntary or is that movement involuntary? That's the question. But the thing I really like that you picked up was that Matt was eating Lucky Charms. Who the hell eats Lucky Charms anymore, number one?
Oh, my God. They're so magically delicious.
No, you got to sing it.
The magically delicious, delicious. That's more the pitch. Yeah, I love those fake marshmallows.
They're just so good. It's like it's hard but not hard, you know. So no, great stuff there. I loved all of that. What you had to say. I think she. I don't know if she woke up, man. I really don't. All right, let's get on the next one.
Hi guys. Good afternoon. It's Maria Moore at Kenzie's Mom on Twitter. I'll make this as quick as possible so I don't start coughing in your ear. This episode just took me to the brink of despair. Lots of crying involved, brought me right back from the edge all before it was over. Christopher Eccleston is always amazing, but this was a total game changer for me. He floored me. I admire and adore Matt for his absolute strength of faith, but mostly his love and utter devotion to Mary. I'm gonna believe that Mary woke up for him. I'm gonna hang on to that. If out of desperation he just needed to believe that she did and he convinced himself. But I'm going to believe that she woke up for him. And I think that even if that wasn't the case, I think his sleeping with Mary in her state is a whole other topic in itself. I don't know if anybody's, you know, talked about that. Wouldn't I want my husband, you know, wouldn't I want to comfort him? Because I think he would take care of me the same way. And as his wife. Even if she wasn't aware, although I'm hanging on to the fact that she was, I believe that his act was out of love and that as his wife, she would have wanted to comfort him in that way. He wouldn't have, you know, been, I don't see it as a violation. I don't know how anyone else feels about that. I feel like Matt could change everything for those people outside the park. He could really be hope where they have none. And he could have that, you know, the flock of people to save that he's been longing for. He could have been smug when he found that boy and his dead dad, but he remained true to his, you know, his humanity and his kind spirit, and he remained a good person. And I think, you know, in the end, it'll turn around for him. And I can't wait to see his journey back to Miracle and to Mary. And for that combo, he owes John Murphy. And that's all I got. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Maria, thank you for calling in. Sweetheart, I got two things out of that I wanted to address. One, let's just say for the sake of your argument that he did do what he did and that she did not give her consent. Is that a violation, do you think? Did he violate Mary? Like, it's not that she is incapable. She's incapable of giving consent regardless.
Yes.
But do you think it's a violation the way that Maria is suggesting? Or it's saying that she didn't think that it was a violation regardless?
I think that if someone is not able to give consensual sex, it is a violation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. No, I understand.
Just because you're married doesn't mean that they can't be raped.
Okay. I understand that. I get it. Now, about the wristband, about the husband, he could have been smug, about the kid, could have been smug.
I was smug at home. I was like, oh, look at you. That's called karma.
Give me my wristband. Thank you very much.
Step on your hand.
I would have done that too. I totally would have stepped on that guy's hand just because. The way that I see it is that Matt finally realized why he is there. He finally realized that I'm here to save people. Not because, you know, the church needs me or whatever. No. I'm here to save people. Take this boy, save him. He deserves to be here. I don't. I have work to do. What do you think?
I felt like Matt felt like it was his job just to get Mary inside Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And since that was able to happen, he owed God something back.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I took it.
I like that. I like that a lot. All right, let's do the next one.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Suzanne Carew. Awesome podcast this week, and I'm looking forward to the next one. So you already know my feelings on this whole awakenings thing. I can't get there just yet. You know, I don't think Matt is malicious, but the whole story just doesn't sit well with me. That being said, I just want to give huge props out to a fellow listener and poster in the Leftovers chat, Caroline Daly. She found an HCG chart that shows the approximate ranges that one could be at various weeks of gestation, and it would appear that at the time of the doctor's visit, if she were well over 1,000 in terms of her levels, she would probably only be like 6 weeks at best. So I don't know how that lines up with Matt's story, that they conceived the night that they arrived in Miracle maybe 3 months prior. So I don't know. Is it the Immaculate Conception? Who knows? Pregnancy's crazy. But huge prop out to Caroline for an interesting find this week. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Suzanne. Sweetheart, what do you think about that? You think, well, first of all, the HCG thing. Wow, Caroline.
Nice job.
Great job. That is freaking awesome. Could this be an Immaculate Conception? Could this? I mean, the lady's
okay, so
name is
long,
Mary.
How long had they been in Miracle already?
They've been in 3 months.
Ugh. Okay, because sperm can like wait for a while,
mm-hmm.
and eggs can take a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're talking about a difference of another 6 weeks.
Sure. So that could just be not enough knowledge for the writers.
I don't know, but I feel like these writers are smart enough that they should have done that right.
Sure.
So if she actually is 9 weeks pregnant, I mean, that, you know, 9 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, because 3 months is 12 weeks.
3 months is 12 weeks.
Shoot. Yeah, no, that's.
She is, in fact, an older woman. She does have a.
No, but the HCG wouldn't change because of her age.
Okay.
It's the hormone that's in your body. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how old the fetus is. So if she got pregnant 12 weeks ago, it would a heck of a lot been closer to the HCG levels of 12 weeks.
Would her state, her vegetative state, affect, do you think, the HCG levels?
I think sperm can only live for 3 days or something like that. I don't know.
Okay, well, here's the obvious question, and I know this answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Okay.
Can a woman in her vegetative state give birth?
Yes.
Why?
Contractions can push out a baby. I learned this in my birthing class that women in comas can actually give birth. It's not even, you don't even have to have a C-section, but that contractions on their own will push that baby out. Yeah, so I'm hoping if the writers do expect us to believe that Matt impregnated her on that first night, then I would hope that they would have gotten the HCG levels correct. Mm-hmm. If not, now this makes me nervous that Matt's had sex with her multiple times.
Oh. Yikes.
Dirty.
Yikes.
So I'm just hoping that the writers had a little mess up, or, you know, that numbers might be a little off for some reason, exactly her age or who knows what. I'm just hoping that when they come and they do the first ultrasound that the baby does line up time-wise. If the baby is younger than that 3 months, mm-hmm. I'm going to be a little nervous. If the embryo, the fetus is a little younger, then I'll be like, ew.
I think that is something that is just, I don't think Matt had sex with her more than once. I really don't. And, well, let's put it this way. I really don't want to believe that he had sex with her more than once. I can't accept that. It'd be hard for me.
I just feel gross talking about all of this.
I know. Let's do the next one.
Hey, this is Rafe Collins Jr. I thought that No Room at the End was a very, very powerful episode. Did Mary wake up? I think she woke up the first time, but maybe not the second. And the way the second is being presented to us might be a red herring to throw doubt on the first. The second happened after Matt was hit in the head. So it kind of made it look like a hallucination, and you could probably begin to guess or assume that, well, maybe he hallucinated the first one. But I don't believe that. So, you know, Damon Lindelof is good for that. He's good for red herrings. He's, good for, tantalizing pieces of information that may or may not have anything to do with the price of tea in China. So you have to really put your detective's hat on and decide what's what. I'm glad to see... Matt is really growing. Matt Jameson is really growing as a character and as a man. It was nice to see Matt Jameson, of all people, stand up to John Murphy. John was kind of flabbergasted. I'm not sure if anybody in this town has ever stood up to him. I think it was really nice to see Matt Jameson be the one to do it. I thought this particular episode was great, and I can't wait to see the next one, because I think things are coming to a head. I think we're going to get to a point where John Murphy's wife is no longer on board with what John is doing. Okay, love you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rafe. Thank you for calling in. Do you think Eric is not going to be on board with John eventually?
Oh, man. You know, I feel like Erica is a really loyal wife.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that theory.
I feel like it would go against her character, because she knows exactly what John is doing this entire time.
The only thing that throws me for a loop is she's a mama.
Mm-hmm.
And her baby's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if it comes down that she feels differently than John does about where Evie is,
mm-hmm.
that might break them up a little bit. But I think Erica is going to stand by her man. I mean, heck, he attempted to murder somebody and she stood by her man.
Straight up attempted to murder Isaac. And she's like, yeah, it's all right. I'll take the bullet out. No problem. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to talk about is the whole thing with Matt confronting John. He was emboldened. He was emboldened by the fact that this guy, the guy who took his wristband, was killed. You could see it. As soon as he walked out, saw that the guy was dead, he realized, oh my God, I got a sign. Just like how two boats from a helicopter, he got signs from God. He finally saw them and he realized what was happening. And this also actually brings us back to Kevin Sr. saying, listen, all I had to do was just listen to the voices. I'm finally doing what they're telling me to do, and I got out of the nut house. Does Matt just have to listen to God? Does Matt just have to listen to these signs that God is giving him? And will he finally be freed? Will he finally get the life that he thinks he deserves? Or is it the life that he actually deserves? Really, like really intriguing stuff. And I wonder if Matt is emboldened by this idea because he finally gets it. I have to listen. I can't just do things on my own because that's what I feel like. I can't take the easy route. God doesn't want that for me. He wants it to be hard. He needs it to be difficult. All right, last one.
Hey, fellow lefties. It's Missy here again. Wow, another great episode this week. I'm another one of those out there who digs the Matt episodes. He's really making us feel his pain, isn't he? Before I get into my favorite part of the episode, I want to send a special thanks to Amber Lerma and Melanie Lynn, the administrators of the Leftovers chat group on Facebook, for allowing me to be a part of their awesome assembly of lefties. You guys are so great. Anybody out there that's not a member, you got to stop by and come and join us. Okay, my favorite part of the episode is the beginning. The repetition of the Bellamy Brothers song, Let Your Love Flow, during Matt's routine of taking care of Mary was so perfect. So we're having our post-episode discussion on the group chat, right? And Susan Carew said, did anyone else have a happy deja vu to Lost with Desmond and the Hatch? Listening to the Mamas and the Papas making your own kind of music? She is so right, though. That's what it was. That's one of the reasons why I love this scene so much. Desmond wakes up, presses the button, plays his song, does his pull-ups, and drinks his protein shakes. Hey, Matt's making shakes, too. So cool. Very cool. The other reason I love the scene is because during the last take of his redundant routine, I thought, oh, man, he's going to get tired of eating the same burritos every single day, and he's going to break. Sure enough, Let Your Love Flow fades into a dark, rumbling, bassline, throbbing type of effect that makes us feel like a climactic moment's approaching, and he snaps. It's just so surreal, and I just love how they're composing everything together. I'm very, very happy. Before I go, I want to give a special thanks to @TheVertigo, one of my special followers on Twitter. He's an avid listener of the Living Reminders podcast and a fervent reader of the blog. He's been on this astounding crusade with us since day one, and he wanted me to share how much he loves the podcast and how he's such a big fan of my call-ins and the articles on the blog. So thank you so much for being such a great supporter of the Living Reminders, sweetie. We love you. You are awesome. Well, Mary and Blake, see, you make so many people out here happy, and we're just so proud to be a part of your fandom family. Thank you for giving us everything to look forward to. You guys are the best. A quick reminder to everyone that after you're done listening to the podcast right now, go ahead and head on to the Living Reminders blog, where you can find some fantastic articles to read by the fans, for you, the fans of The Leftovers. As editor-in-chief, I want for you to know that you're welcome to read our blog anytime, and you can find us at thelivingreminders.com and click on the blog link, or directly at thelivingreminders.blogspot.com. And don't be shy. Leave us comments. Tell us what you think. Okay, guys, you can follow me at Missy G. Ortiz on Twitter, and, well, that's it. Bye. Thanks, Mary and Blake.
Thank you, Missy. Thank you so much. And I just got one thing for you, too.
We have to go back, Kate.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know what I was thinking?
What?
This is totally a different... This is me bringing some humor. So for those of you who are depressed, listen up. Okay. Matt was eating burritos every day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Missy's talking about that. And then she says, and then there was the low rumbling. And I would be like, that was gas. It wasn't a baseline. That was farts. If he's eating burritos every freaking day, he is totally going to be irritable because he has gas issues from all those beans. That was Matt's gas.
Keeping it classy.
That's what I was listening to during her voicemail. I heard everything else you said, but I was thinking about that. I'm like, burritos every day, as delicious as it sounds, not gonna feel so good.
This is why I love you, and this is why I married you. You're my
potty humor at 33.
Like I said, call us a lot of things, but you can't call us professional. I'll tell you that. You ready to get for ready for the tweet of the week, kiddo?
Yes, please.
All right, let's do it. All right, this week's tweet of the week is by A. Siegel. I think that's how you pronounce it. A. Siegel? Sure, why not? He or she says, It's a guilty pleasure. I don't understand anything about The Leftovers, and yet I watch it like I wrote it. Hashtag like a boss. Well, A. Siegel, congratulations for being this week's Tweet of the Week. By winning the Tweet of the Week, you get a $20 gift card to Tag Your It Etsy shop. Just go to www.tagyourit.biz where you can redeem that $20 gift card and get anything you choose, whether it's something that's Leftovers related or anything that is there that she already has at her shop, or if it's just something that's custom that you'd like to create, Dawn, the owner, can do it for you. So again, A. Siegel, congratulations on being this week's Tweet of the Week. Well, my love, I think it is time to close out the show. Do you have any final thoughts about this episode or anything that you have been thinking about The Leftovers over the past few weeks or whatever?
Nope. Now I'm just thinking about burritos.
Really? That's what you got for me?
That's what I got, guys. Thank you so much for everyone who sent in your feedback. I love... Burritos and tacos are my favorite food.
Oh, God.
Thank you. As I was saying, thank you to everyone who has sent in your feedback.
That's correct. And don't forget that we have our next episode is with Max Richter, the composer of The Leftovers. And we will be putting that up on Monday, which is, I think, 2 days from now. And you'll be able to listen to all the cool things that he has to say about the show, how he created the music, why he created the music, and his process with Damon Lindelof, as a matter of fact. So I think that's it, my love. You ready?
You bet.
All right, let's do it.
Please reach out to us, especially after each episode. We want to get your feedback. You can head on over to Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Our handles are Living Reminders.
And if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com to see all previous episodes and to check out some other cool things like our blog.
And then while you're there at the episode, you can go to the top right-hand corner that has this little button that says support. And when you click that button, you'll find a whole bunch of different ways to support The Living Reminders. One of them is Patreon, where you can donate $1 or $2 or $125 billion per month. You can totally do it. We'd be glad to accept in any way that you'd be able to give. If you want to give a one-time deal and not a monthly commitment, you can give a donation on PayPal, just a one-time thing. But the most important thing you can do, aside from all the money, who cares about that? What really matters is tell a friend. If we provide enough value for you as a companion to The Leftovers, if we do a good job, if you like us, our episodes, our listener feedback episodes, our engagement, our amazing interviews with the likes of Max Richter and Amy Brenneman and Ann Dowd, Carrie Coon, all the major players of this show, if we give enough for you, tell a friend that we exist. Because that is what gets us the recognition that we need as not only a podcast, but as a community of The Leftovers.
Speaking about The Leftovers community, we've been talking about iTunes on every episode for the month of November. Mm-hmm. We originally had 59 ratings and reviews, and it is now November 7th, yep. And we are now up to 62.
Nice.
I'm so excited. But I still have that goal that we're going to reach 70 ratings and reviews. So please, if you have not yet taken the time, head on over to iTunes, type in The Living Reminders, and leave us a rating and a review. The review you have to write out a little bit. So you can rate us on your iPhone, but you got to go to your computer to write the review.
And if I know you can get confused, and it gets a little overwhelming to write a review. But if you do have the podcast app, if you're listening to us on iTunes, on your iPhone, you can write a review within the podcast app for us. So just get your little thumbs and start plugging away for those. And the last but not least thing is go to livingreminders.com, click on the word blog, and you'll be able to find our blog written by the fans for you, the fans, about all the great things that happen in The Leftovers, and you can read all about it.
So for now, I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.